Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
There's nothing worse than having people talk about your turkey for the wrong reasons on the drive home. You want them to talk about your turkey in glowing terms. Well, it starts with a fresh turkey, and it starts with Joseph's Finest Meats. USDA prime dry-aged beef, homemade sausage, and only the finest meats. 7101 West Edison Street, Chicago. Call 773-736-3766. Joseph's Finest Meats. Just don't ask for my turkey because I've already called in and made my reservation. There's nothing like it. A fresh turkey at Joseph's Finest Meat. These guys are about quality product. No preservatives, no hormones, no fillers. And when you're having Thanksgiving, you want to treat your family to something that they won't forget. That's why I'm getting my Thanksgiving turkey at Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street on the northwest side of Chicago at Addison and Nordica. And don't think you're going to do it like at the last minute. Pick up the phone now and get it done so you won't forget. A family tradition since 1977 and proud sponsor of JohnCastNews.com and the Chicago Way Podcast. You know, I've known some horses. There was a time when I left the Merchant Marine and I was a broken, angry young man. I don't want you to get the idea that I'm some sort of top-hand cowboy because I'm not. I learned to ride a little bit, at least enough on the trail so I could take a horse out for exercise and not smash him into a tree. It was at Moraine Valley Community College. The horse that I really wanted to ride was Galibay, a French jumper that I put in the column. Temperamental, brilliant, angry, kind of like me back in those days, and a brilliant athlete, not like I was ever, a temperamental baby of an athlete. If you could just be on that horse for 20 minutes, you would see the real horse. I didn't know I was healing myself, but there's something about working with horses that can heal the hurt inside you. I don't want to get too sentimental about it, but horses are majestic creatures. But you know, the real thing is when you're holding that brush and you're combing them out and the sound of the brush in the silence of the barn, that's how you begin to heal yourself. So how do you begin to heal a city that's broken? First, you have to look clearly at what's happened. And that's why we're here with Paul Vallis. Paul Vallis wrote a piece in the Chicago Contrarian I really liked called The Killing Fields. And I really liked it and I wanted him on the podcast. So he's here today. And along with, as always, Jeff Carlin, the guy who started this podcast with me. Jeff is an executive producer at WGN Radio. And I always say, friend to cats, baker of pies, but really he hasn't made me a pie. He knows that I'm diabetic and I can't have his pies. And me, I'm John Cass, editor of John Cass News, where for only $50, you get two columns a week and guest columns from other fine writers like Corey Franklin, James Benakis, Dan Proft, and others. Fill your cup of Midwestern common sense. And you, as I'm prattling on about horseback riding like a hop-along Cassidich in the snow, you're on the Chicago Way Podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall-style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
People think that Illinois and Chicago are modern cities and states, but I suggest that they're really medieval, because we have medieval gangs of criminals running the streets and the Latin kings threatening to murder ICE agents and custom enforcement agents. It's all chaos and fear. And J.B. Pritzker, governor, and Brandon Johnson, mayor, have no clue, or maybe they do have a clue. Maybe they do want to run it like a medieval underworld. Just like I remember reading a book on this years and years ago, trying to take a break from Chicago politics. And it was a book I found at the University of Chicago, The Medieval Underworld. And it is exactly what I'm seeing now. All about pain, all about anger. And to this we bring Paul Vallis, former candidate for mayor, should have been elected mayor, but Vallis has written an interesting piece for the Chicago Contrarian, Chicago's Killing Fields, just a few days ago, on November 10th, he published it. It begins, while city and state leaders stoke false fears of an ICE invasion, they ignore Chicago again leads the nation in school-aged youth murdered and wounded. And he refers to a series that I remember quite well. In 1993, I was just a kid then in the business, Chicago's Killing Our Children series at the Tribune. Paul Vallis, welcome to the Chicago Way.
Well, thanks for having me, John. And yeah, I remember that piece very, very well. I was, at the time, I was city budget director, and it occurred over a series of weeks. And at the time, the previous year, there had been 57 children murdered in the Chicagoland area. So they did a piece where they profiled each of the children who had been murdered. I don't know if it won the Pulitzer, but it got a lot of national recognition. It was an excellent piece.
It was designed to win the Pulitzer, but I don't think it did. I don't know. I don't remember. But that's what happens.
But the point of my article was to just point out that those type of shootings, or that volume of shootings, has in no way ended. In fact, this year, when I wrote the article, and I haven't looked at the website, heyjackass.com, which has all the update crime statistic. But this year alone, in only Chicago, there's been 42 school-age youth, 17 years and younger, murdered, and 154 shot and wounded. And John, since schools were reopened, as you know, there was a spike, a dramatic spike in youth violence during the 2 years that the COVID closing straddled. There were something like 900 kids during that period who were shot, and well over 100 of them have been killed. But since the schools reopened, there's been 1,462 children shot and 311 murdered. I don't think you've had a press release on the carnage. I don't think you've had a press conference. I don't see articles. I don't see a Tribune or sometimes series, kind of the sequel to Killing Our Children, totally ignored. But yet you have ICE arrest a employee on one of the 626 Chicago public school campuses. And incidentally, there's 218 Chicago Archdiocese school campuses. You have one arrest, and it got a press conference. It's got the mayor equating the crackdown on immigration with slavery. It got Pritzker grandstanding, as he does every day, on something related to Trump. So they're totally ignoring the fact that there's this carnage going on. And the overwhelming vast majority of these children are Black. I think about 75% of those who have been murdered have been Black children. But yet the mayor, who doesn't wake up in the morning without trying to think about how to use race again as an excuse for his failings, they're dead silent.
And Paul, that's a backdrop against the backdrop of a shrinking, somehow, in a third largest city in the country, student body size, right? That they also ignored, and somehow costs keep going up and up and up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, just to throw out a statistic, you know, there's been a massive exodus in Illinois since 2000, and it's accelerated when Pritzker took office. 1.6 million people, residents have left the state. And obviously Chicago has lost population during that period too. But the biggest exodus since 2000 in Chicago has been Black families, overwhelmingly middle-income families with children. And today, while there are 17% fewer Black adults in the city of Chicago, there are 47% fewer Black children living in Chicago, which means Black families, Blacks have been leaving and they've been taking their children. And it's because of crime. It's because of terrible, terrible schools, school choices. And it's because of taxes, just the cost of living for middle income and lower income families.
There is no solution, it seems. We have in Chicago, Mayor Johnson keeps slapping on taxes. How many people will be left in the city of Chicago after he's done, if he is done, ever?
Well, first of all, you know, the rhetoric that comes out of the mayor's mouth, or for that matter, the Democratic Party, because let me point out, you saw the other day when Johnson was asked about whether or not he had given the federal government the data, financial data, on how much they've spent on illegal migrants. He challenged the term illegal migrants, and he equated calling migrants illegal with calling Black slaves. And then, of course, Welch, not to be outdone, his buddy Welch, the Speaker of the House, you know, the guy who strong-armed a number of individuals who wanted to support me for mayor, threatening to cut off their funding, he echoed the same thing. So they're playing from the same hymnal. But the bottom line is the mayor's budget is an absolute disaster. We're hearing rhetoric that this is about taxing the rich and corporations and forcing them to pay their fair share. All the taxes in the mayor's budget, for the most part, are taxes that are going to impact working people, struggling businesses, and you know, individuals, middle, you know, all individuals. Not, for example, the head tax is a tax on employers for the number of employees they have, regardless of whether those businesses are making money or not. Sure, they're targeting the larger businesses, but restaurants and you know, I mean, there's a lot of businesses with over 100 employees, but they could be losing money. They could be struggling just to survive, and they're going to be taxed anyway. And then, of course, the cloud tax, which would raise the tax that is already the highest in the nation, would tax anyone who uses computer services or uses computers. I think it would rise to 14%. And then, of course, they're imposing a congestion tax on drivers. You know what I mean? Drivers who drive to work because they're afraid to take the CTA because
they might get killed. Because
they have fewer cops patrolling the CTA than they have cops protecting the mayor. I mean, the bottom line is these are regressive taxes. And let me point out that despite the mayor's claims that he hasn't raised property taxes, he in fact has. And his school board raised school property taxes by another $236 million on top of the $150, $160 that rose it last year. And then, of course, he handed the Chicago Teachers Union, he handed the schools another $550 million in property tax collections through the tax increment financing TIF surpluses. So his budget, the biggest beneficiary in his budget is the Chicago Teachers Union and the absolute bankrupt Chicago public school system.
I'm here with Jim Barker and Beth Horitzai for Cribby Coffee. That's Cribby Coffee, K-R-I-B-I, our new sponsors. I keep saying, John Cass News, where you can always pour yourself a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And that means Cribby Coffee to me. I love it.
John, I couldn't agree more. And I did it yesterday in my Lutza mug that I recently purchased and enjoyed a great cup of Mount Oku as I read your column on Sunday morning. Hear, hear.
You know, Thanksgiving is coming, and you're going to need a good cup of coffee, but how do I get my hands on it?
Well, right now we're in two cafes in the Forest Park and Oak Park areas, but we also are in your local retailers like Pete's and Tony's, but you can find us online at cribbycoffee.com. CRIBICOFFEE.com. You can actually customize to the exact setting that you want. So the grind and the roast, whole bean, whatever you'd like, you can get it right there.
Interesting. So I just want the coffee and scoop it out, put it in the coffee maker. How can I do that?
We can do that for you. Just go to cribbycoffee.com. You can shop right there for anything you want.
And it'll deliver to your doorstep within, I think it's 5 days, isn't it?
Yes.
You'll deliver it to my house?
Yes.
Wow.
You can even get a subscription so you never have to go back on again. We'll just automatically deliver it to you.
I've canceled all my other subscriptions, like for the paper, but I will subscribe to Cribby Coffee. Yeah. Because I've had your product. It's rich, it's tasty, and it's not like that crazy mushroom nonsense. It's real coffee.
It is real coffee.
Yes, it is.
Cribby Coffee, proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. We always get a good cup of common sense. As we talk about Pritzker and Johnson screaming and talking about, as they do, invoking the Civil War, I would like people to realize something called the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. It has just 77 words, and it states clearly that the Constitution and the federal laws and treaties are the supreme law of the land. So what does that do to fantasy projects like the Sanctuary, where we're not going to apply the federal law against people that we happen to like, so they'll vote for us? Even though they're illegal, we want them to vote for us. Isn't that the democratic way? But is that legal, constitutional?
Look, we're, of course it isn't. Look, what ICE is doing here is they're enforcing
the law,
federal immigration laws. As simple as
that. Right.
And whether you agree with the approach or don't, or disagree with the approach, the fact is that's what they're in fact doing. And while, you know, while in this day and age of social media, and in this day and age where the Democrats have decided that they are going to milk the ICE arrests for everything, for all they're worth. I mean, when you have a press conference and a series of stories about the arrest of one employee on a Chicago public school campus, and, you know, in the same week that you had the 43rd or 44th kid killed and murdered in their neighborhoods in the city of Chicago, you know, clearly they're milking this. They're absolutely milking this for all it's worth. And you know what, John, they've really doubled and tripled down. I mean, you know, they got defensive when people accused them of using, of calling like Republicans Nazis or comparing Trump to Hitler. Well, they've doubled and tripled down on it.
Right.
You can't go on social media without somebody making the Hitler comparison again. And they've simply doubled and tripled down on that rhetoric. I mean, it's absolutely infuriating. J.B. Pritzker, you know, thinks that because he's one of the largest contributors to the Holocaust Museum, he has the expertise and the knowledge and the right to decide who the Nazis are and who the Nazis aren't. And you know, and of course, playing that card again and again and again and again. I mean, you know, what's amazing has been his silence or his reluctance to criticize. If you remember when the city council passed the pro-Hamas Gaza resolution, and you know when he was very late to criticize Johnson when he appointed that anti-Semitic, clearly anti-Semitic, president of the school board. You know, they've been really silent on that. I was appalled when you had David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel talking to Tapper and about Mamdani. About Mamdani.
Oh.
Oh, he's a good listener. He has the capacity to grow. Where have we heard that? You know, where have we heard that before? So, I mean, it's just absolutely appalling. But then on the flip side, you have Johnson. Just as Pritzker is an authority on who the Nazis are in the country today, you have Johnson, who thinks because he's black, that makes him an authority on who the racists are. So he doubles and triples and quadruples down on the race card at every step at every opportunity. Let me point out that Johnson is doubling and tripling down on the race card and is desperately trying to equate the treatment of migrants with the treatment of blacks, because he and Stacey Davis Gates and others have fundamentally betrayed the black community. They've taken away, they're trying to destroy even their public school choice. They got rid of the scholarship program for poor families who want to send their kids to private schools. If you go to a Chicago public school and you're Black and you come from a low-income Black family, you literally have no choices than you're most often failing school. Because we don't have enough police officers, only half of the 911 calls are responded to on a timely basis. And 75% of the 911 calls come from overwhelmingly Black communities. He's invested practically nothing in affordable housing. He only opened, I think, three of the mental health centers that Rahm Emanuel
closed. Wait a second, Paul. I fully expect that there will be clotheslines running from building across LaSalle Street where people are doing their laundry as he creates public housing on LaSalle Street. Yes? Isn't that what he wants to do?
Well, he wants to do it, but let me point out he's so inept. They've committed, I think, about $330 million in taxpayer in TIF dollars, which are property taxes that are skimmed off the top and go to the very political and often corrupt TIF programs. And he's given it to politically connected contributors and supporters, and he's giving them these subsidies to create. I think the total is over 500 affordable housing units. And in other words, it's about $700,000, $800,000 per unit. So we have an affordable housing crisis here in the city, and he's giving hundreds of millions of dollars to developers to literally create a handful of units. But when you watch him at his press conferences, and when you watch him, because he's a favorite guest of the mainstream media, you know what I mean? When you watch him talk about Al Sharpton, you would think that he's flooding the community with government-run grocery stores, and that he's creating affordable housing for poor families, and it's nothing. It's all BS. It's all rhetoric. It's a mirage. But the point that I'm trying to make is the mayor and Stacey Davis Gates and even Pritzker's agenda, since he wants to play the race card, let me respond by saying your agenda is an anti-Black agenda because poor Black families are denied quality school choices. Poor Black families are likely to live in neighborhoods that don't have enough cops patrolling or to respond to emergency calls that they make. Poor Black families are not seeing any substantive investments in their communities. It's all a mirage. It's all a hoax. But the Democratic Party can continue to think that they can treat the Black community as almost indentured servants and who will basically vote for them all the time, despite the fact that they're doing nothing if they play the race card. Look, the Democratic strategy in blue states has really been to displace their population losses with Latinos and with migrants. And just not Latinos, but migrants.
Well, what does that do to housing prices?
In this state, in this city, should be aware of. Since 2000, as I mentioned, 1.6 million people have left. Only New York and California have seen a larger exodus. That exodus, the average income of individuals leaving the state of Illinois, and this was an analysis that Warrior Points did, is almost $40,000 higher than the average income of individuals moving into the city and into the state.
So, in other words, the wealthy leave and the poor enter, right?
The middle income and wealthy leave and the poor enter. And over the last 3 to 4 years, the overwhelming majority of those who have entered have been illegal immigrants. Depending on what analysis you look at, we either have between 530 and 550,000 illegal immigrants. So we're displacing middle and upper income residents who are leaving. And those leaving across all demographics, as I mentioned, Chicago has seen the largest exodus of Blacks of any big city in the country, including since 2000. But so you've had that massive exodus, and then you've had this the new arrivals, individuals moving into the city, have been earning significantly less money. But the majority of those moving into Illinois are actually on some form of public assistance. So we're not only losing about $40,000 in taxable income for on average for Illinois residents leaving. But those who are coming are the majority of them are receiving some sort of public subsidies. So it hits us with a double whammy. So you want to know why our economy is not growing? You want to know why our tax base is not growing? You know why they're raising taxes every year? Because, you know, they're not going to cut. They're just going to try to tax more. Well, that's the primary reason. The policies are driving out the middle and upper income families, and the sanctuary city policies are inviting low income individuals who are going to be in need of public assistance to come into the city. I think the city has spent over $600 million subsidizing illegal migrants since 2019.
Money that they just borrow and don't have, but they take it from Jeff and Christine. We would be remiss. You know, I love that phrase. We would be remiss.
Okay, Bruce Wolf.
Right. If we did not acknowledge that last week we also talked about illegal immigration and immigration. And we had a friend of mine on, Ray Lopez, with whom I vehemently disagree. Ultimately, I wanted to agree with him because he talked about maybe having some sort of compassionate amnesty for those who've been here the longest illegally. And then all of a sudden, here comes Pritzker and Johnson talking Civil War talk, and they ratchet up the rhetoric, the anger. And, you know, if you support immigration law, you're against black and brown people. They're playing race games dangerously. And after all that, I thought, okay, forget it. I can't support such a compromise or an amnesty. And I thought, but I like Ray Lopez, and I think you guys do, too.
Well, I wrote a couple of op-ed pieces on the issue of immigration, and I actually wrote one during the Biden administration, before Trump was reelected, and before things really escalated. And I've always felt that had I been mayor, I would have done two things when it comes to immigration. First of all, I would have either revoked or amended the sanctuary city laws along the lines of what Lopez and other aldermen were pushing in the city council, and I would have basically said this, we are going to do two things. We're going to fully cooperate with the federal government when it comes to identifying immigrants, illegal migrants who are in the city, who somehow have committed crimes or have been involved in wrongdoing. And if you remember, when Homan came to Chicago in January, right after Trump got elected, he basically said, look, work with us, because right now we want to prioritize on getting the criminals out. And they have. They've gotten a lot out. And getting the criminals out, those individuals who have committed crimes, cooperate with us. Because if you don't, and we have to come in, and we have to cast a wide net, and we have to do it on our own, there's going to be immigrants here who may have not committed crimes, but for the fact that they're here illegally, and they're going to get swept up. So cooperate with us in doing that first. And that's something I would have absolutely done. I also would have done something that Daley did in the 90s when the murder rate went from over almost 1,000 to it fell to the 400s. And if you remember, I was city budget director then and then school superintendent. And he created a working group of all the federal, state, and local public safety entities, including FBI prosecutor. Every week he'd have everybody in the room, and they would strategize how they were going to get and keep the dangerous criminals off the street. So at the end of the day, I would have done that. And then what I would have told the federal government is, look, there are a lot of individuals who are here, and they may be here legally, but they may be working, and they may be raising families. And we want to get them registered. We want them to make sure that they're paying taxes and things like that. And we want to give them temporary work visas as we assess and process those who are already here, to give them an opportunity to remain, things like that. So that's the approach. So I probably lean more towards Ray in that regard. But if they would have done that, if they would have gone to Homan, if they would have gone to the federal government and done that, that is something that they probably would have embraced. But, John, they wanted a confrontation with Trump. Whether you support Trump or not, Pritzker needs Trump. He's raised property. He's raised taxes and fees 55 times, $7 billion since he's been in office, despite getting $14 billion in COVID money. And the state is last in equity. It's last practically every economic indicator. I mean, Illinois may be the worst managed state east of California. So at the end of the day, he's been an unmitigated disaster. And of course, Johnson is fundamentally clueless. His top priority is to subsidize the CTA, the CTU, his former employer.
That's all he knows. That's all he knows.
That this budget is all a massive subsidy to the Chicago Teachers Union controlled schools. If they took that $550 million and they basically said, we're going to give you $550 million into surpluses, but you got to spend it on things that the city is currently subsidizing in the school district, the mayor could pass his budget without raising either the cloud tax or the head tax. See, but this is all a bailout for the Chicago Teachers Union. So that's what this is about. But they need Trump. Every day there's a Trump attack. I mean, look at evidence where you have influencer Kat, you know, showing up there so she can have a confrontation with an ICE agent so she can get thrown on her butt. A great iconic moment.
I love that one with that awful that got thrown to the ground.
Yeah,
after she was attacking a federal agent. Yeah,
And then not to be outdone, there's Best confronting a federal agent who was very constrained in his face, and then pretending that this is like an invasion. I mean, they need to demonize someone. Now the day goes by that you don't hear something. Right now, Pritzker, surprise, surprise. The state budget was not balanced. Surprise, surprise. The state's looking at a $3 billion budget deficit next year. Who's Pritzker blaming? Trump. Who does Johnson blame? Trump. I mean, they need Trump. But the danger in demonizing Trump and demonizing the administration and in effect calling half the nation who voted for him effectively Nazis or supporters of Nazis, the danger of that is it creates conditions for more violence. Because when you say this guy's a Nazi, when you say these guys are thugs, or these guys are Gestapos, or ICE agents are invading our city, it gives you a justification. It almost gives a demented person a justification to go in there and to engage in violent acts. It's amazing that the ICE agents have been as restrained as they are. But I believe that they almost want a shooting. They almost want a case where an ICE agent shoots.
Yes, they do.
And it doesn't appear to be in self-defense. So they can spend weeks and grandstanding and doing the talk shows. They need that diversion. Chicago is a basket case. Chicago's on the financial brink, and the state is not that far away. And so look to the Democrats in this state, in this gerrymandered state, this one-party state. Look at them to continue to umpty the rhetoric because it's the only thing they got going for them. But this is a disaster. And it's unfortunate that the community that's going to be impacted the most. And, you know, the community that has always been a priority when it comes to my policies, whether or not I was city budget director or school chief or all the schools that I built in the poorest communities at a time when school enrollment was rising, not declining. The poorest communities are going to suffer the most, the Black community in particular. I will also say this. If the federal government really, really wants to come in and kick Johnson and Pritzker in their behinds, to just put the Democratic Party on the defensive and on notice, while at the same time benefiting the residents of the city of Chicago and the residents of the state, they would do two things. The first thing is the Justice Department would come in and they would investigate the criminal justice system here. That is.
Wait a minute. Let's not just pass that by. You would have the Justice Department going and investigating who exactly?
I would be investigating the courts. I would investigate Fox for colluding with the trial lawyers. As you know, I did a piece called The Police in Chicago.
What about the media in that?
Well, you know, you're not going to investigate the media. I mean, where do you start? But the bottom line is I would investigate the courts. I would investigate the Clerk's office. I would investigate the definitely investigate Fox, who created this Justice Review Committee that released hundreds of individuals on allegations of police corruption. And then those same individuals and the same lawyers who got them released turned around and filed massive lawsuits. You know, there's 275 cases pending of individuals released by Fox that are probably going to cost the city in excess of $1 billion. And just to provide you with a comparison, Chicago has half the number of all those released in the country because of allegations of police misconduct. And half of all the money paid out in settlements in the entire nation comes from the city of Chicago. And it's a racket. It's an absolute racket. The pretrial release program from 20,000 to 2024, before the SAFE Act, there were 408 individuals who were either murdered or wounded by individuals who were at home on pretrial release, awaiting trial for other felonies, and they have been released. And incidentally, CWB said 20% of all those committing violent crimes, including murder and attempted murder, were individuals who were out on trial, who were out on pretrial release awaiting trial for other felonies. So that's where you really want to have an impact. That's where you can have an impact. And then the second thing that I would do is to put the Chicago Public Schools under a federal consent decree and to bring in and to investigate the Chicago Teachers Union, who refused to release their audit, their state mandate.
How long has it been now?
It's been 5 years.
And aren't they required by law, by Illinois law?
They are. Well, I'm waiting for the U.S. for the state attorney general to look at what they're doing. We have an apartheid school system. You carried that article for me, which I really
appreciate.
Because you were the only one who allowed me to use the title apartheid.
It's true.
Yeah, look, I like to throw the racial epitaphs right back into Johnson and Stacey Davis Gates' face. If you're black and you're poor in the city of Chicago, the quality of your school is determined by where you live and your zip code and your income. And so we have a discriminatory. There is ample civil rights justifications for the U.S. Attorney's Office to go into the Chicago Public Schools and to investigate how the schools are allocating their monies and to address the issue of why poor families, overwhelmingly black and Latino, are being denied quality school choices. Those are the two things that the federal government could do, that the Trump administration could do, that would not only stick it to Johnson and Pritzker, who are the personification of governmental management and competency, but it would at the same time help Chicago residents, help those poor families that don't have school choice and that live in unsafe neighborhoods. Because up until, thank God, the election of Fox, they were simply releasing 75% of those arrested for felony, for serious felonies. They were just releasing them back into the community.
Now, let's take a break and think about where are you taking us. What's your step?
Yeah, what's next for Paul Vallis?
What I've been doing post-election is to work with my supporters to really help build an organization that can support moderate candidates. Look, I'm a moderate Democrat. John, you know me from...
I've known you for 40 years, Paul.
I mean, I'm from the party of Phil Rock and, you know, I mean, those moderate...
Don Clark Netsch.
And Don Clark Netsch, who I worked for many a year. Look,
right.
Look, during the campaign, you know, I had, I had the LGBT rights organization and their former director, because they appropriately replaced him, attacked me as being anti-LGBT. I supported marriage equality when it was called gay marriage when I ran for governor against Rob Blagojevich. Somebody asked me the question about, at the time, it was referred to as gay marriage. And I said, why would I oppose anything like that?
You supported gay marriage before Obama did. For God's sake.
12 years before Obama. I mean, I'm the guy who went to Haiti and chaired Sean Penn's organization, that far right MAGA, Sean Penn, right? Who, to his everlasting credit, more than his great movie roles as Oscars, him taking care of 52,000 displaced Haitians displaced in the 2010 earthquake, That's what will get them into heaven. And I was finance chair of that organization. I went to Haiti 40 times doing Haiti relief. Haiti put me in the hospital 12, three times, almost killed me.
So answer the question. Would you consider running again? Because I think that there, you know what I've said to you. Well, I've said I would commit bodily harm against you.
Yeah, well, you know.
But there are people who are talking about it because the city's dying. And maybe there's a chance to just stop the bleeding.
What we've been trying to do, and as you know, post-election, we created the Urban Center, and where we defeated 7 of the 10 CTU-backed candidates for the school board. Yep. We helped raise money for Eileen Burke to get her elected. You know, we battled the real estate transfer tax. Obviously, we were very vocal about Evans, and, you know, we like to think we played a role in him not getting reappointed. So we've had a lot of success. So what we're doing is we've been meeting and talking to almost all the candidates who have indicated their interest in running or may have an interest in running and may have not publicly said it yet, to see if there is a candidate out there that we can close ranks around who just won't be a candidate who can beat Johnson, because God knows, I don't think we want another, like, we don't want another Lori Lightfoot or Rahm Emanuel. Sorry. I mean, people forget that Rahm Emanuel got rid of 2,200 police positions, and then the murder rate went from the low 400s to well over 800 during that period of time. And so I don't wax nostalgic for Rahm Emanuel.
Me neither, because of that kid, 16 shots. He buried that video.
Right. And then he scapegoated the cops.
Yeah.
Including McCarthy. He threw them all under the bus. He threw them all under the bus.
He threw Gary under the bus probably first.
That's right. And of course, he waited 4 years to address any of the really critical financial issues, particularly pensions, until his second term. And as a result of that, the remedy was what? They raised property taxes, what, $600 million or something like that? So at the end of the day, I'm sorry, I don't like nostalgia for Rahm Emanuel. But I think the key is we've got to find a candidate who not only can win, but a candidate who can do what needs to be done. And that requires, John, that requires that you be prepared to do battle with the Chicago Teachers Union, because the schools, the failed school system is destroying this city. And we're pumping more and more and more money into a system that is doing damage. They've abandoned standards. They've abandoned accountability. They're graduating kids not prepared for college. But yet they're demanding more and more money. And right now the schools get 58% of all the property taxes. And they claim that they're $1.6 billion short. They're spending $34,000 a year. So,
Didn't they spend a lot of money on vacations? Did you guys hear about this one? All the nice vacations they took?
You know, John, what's so infuriating is, and the story was in the Sun-Times, and the Sun-Times basically did a story on the Inspector General's report talking about they had more than doubled the number, the money that they had spent, the millions of dollars that they had spent on travel. Travel to Egypt, travel to foreign countries.
Right. We're not talking economy class across, you know, town.
Well, Las Vegas, the biggest domestic destination point was to go to Las Vegas. And incidentally, John, the huge increase in travel occurred since 2019. After the COVID pandemic shut down the schools, after the teachers union forced the district to keep the schools shut for 78 weeks. So while schools were shut, while the CTU was attacking individuals for not getting vaccinated or attacking anybody who wanted schools to be reopened, you had school administrators and teachers. And look, I'm not saying the majority of them, it was a small minority, but they were going out on the public dole, and they were basically, you know, going to these exotic places while schools were closed. While the kids out of school, there was a spiked the dramatic increase in youth crime, which saw the number of kids murdered and shot increased by 50%.
Which brings us back to your article on the killing field, Chicago, the killing field. All right, so every tragedy needs a little levity. We got to laugh a little bit. And we got to take a break and breathe. And I just suggest to both of you that I found a great comedy show that you would like. It might hurt the ears, but I was watching Chicago Week in Review, which was once a very respected and revered institution in Chicago. And they would talk about, they would have journalists from all the different papers, different points of view. And now I see that there's no, the comedy comes when you watch all these people peddling slogans and not having any idea. It's just like going to a Marxist convention for idiots. They don't know how to, they don't, I mean, I sometimes have difficulty speaking because of my brain injury, but they have difficulty speaking because of their ideology. They're always constantly supporting the left, the Marxist viewpoint. It's so pathetic and so predictable. And I wonder if you don't have a reference point, maybe you won't find it funny. But I do.
I'm old enough to remember the Gridiron Show when, of course, the mainstream media would all come together and make fun of each other and make fun of. And they would do like, there would be a theme for every one of the Gridiron Shows. And
I used to go to those.
And they'd roast each other. And it was very, it could be very unorthodox, particularly in some of their comments. And of course, you remember the Gridiron Show where they made fun of Daly. And of course, if you remember the year, that was the year Pulp Fiction came out. So the title of that Gridiron Show was, it had a picture of Daly, like with the victory signs, and it was called Pulp Diction. Of course, Pulp Diction, making fun of Daly. So anyway, and of course, the star of the Gridiron Show was Barney, because if you remember, we passed the Barney budgets. I think your late friend and colleague at the Tribune coined my budgets as the Barney budgets, because Daly had his previous budget rejected. And of course, our budget even got unanimous support from the Harold Washington block. And so he called it the Barney budget. So of course, you know, I was Barney. So they brought out a Barney dinosaur, and I was Barney, if you remember this. So I got hammered with that monocle. But you're right. It's like going to these conferences is like going to the Soviet 70th Party Congress or something like that. It's like,
yeah, but they don't see anything humorous in it.
There's nothing.
They're so serious. They don't understand. They're laughing stocks. Like any historian or budget analyst would laugh their heads off, but they proceed because they're WBEZ or Tribune or Block Club or whatever. I see them out there sitting around the ring, talking, and I'm not really a good enough poet to lampoon it.
But, you know, even in the mainstream media, you know, you're hard-pressed, you know, and I never watched the talk shows, although I do enjoy Bill Maher, and you know, I love his analysis of events, but you know, but I'm not one to watch like late night and stuff like that. But you see the excerpts on social media, and of course they try to be funny by engaging in political humor, but it's not. It's angry political humor. You know what I mean? And of course, I used to like Jon Stewart until he brought Mamdani. He basically interviewed Mamdani, and he referred to Mamdani as the Jackie Robinson of American politics.
You know, David Mamet once said that, you know what terrifies the left, and he's speaking of the media people on the left, it terrifies them to be irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because they have to fill the empty space with the sound of their own barking.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And it's just pathetic. I would much rather get on a horse, a good horse, and ride them in the snow than listen to those idiots.
I know. It is painful, absolutely painful to watch, but that's why their viewership is so significantly diminished. You know, look, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel was about Disney losing money, trust me. You know what I mean? God, my God. I mean, look at what they were spending. Look at what they spent on those late night shows.
Okay.
All right.
Paul Vallis, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Bob.
My pleasure.
For Paul Vallis, former candidate for mayor of Chicago, who should have been elected but wasn't, and Chicago, in its wisdom, chose Brandon Johnson so they can live with it. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, co-host here for many years, future physics teacher, and for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of common sense. Join us again next time, won't you, for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.